Hello and welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Tomos Lewis. Today, in this special edition of our weekly film review, we'll bring you the best from the world's largest festival of documentary filmmaking, Hot Docs, here in Toronto. I'll be joined by the film critic Norm Wilner here at Monocle's Toronto Bureau to discuss the three standout films from this year's festival. That's a special edition of the Monocle Arts Review, coming to you from this year's Hot Docs Documentary Film Festival here in Toronto, with me, Tomos Lewis. Norm Wilner, thank you very much indeed for joining us on this special edition of the Monocle Arts Review, coming here from Toronto to coincide, I suppose, with Hot Docs. Hot Docs is upon us again, North America's largest documentary film festival. Before we get into your top picks from this year's fest, just give us a quick sense from your perspective of the role it plays in the international documentary scene. How much of a hub is it here in Toronto?
I think it's fair to say it's massive at this point. There are projects that are funded through Hot Docs pitch initiatives, producers, filmmakers, distributors. I mean, it's become as big as TIFF, I suspect, for documentary films. Certainly, it's a nexus. If you're in North America, you'll do full frame, you'll do true false, but you're going to make sure you don't miss Hot Docs. Certainly for the first half of the year, this is the place to be.
And just a quick overview of this year's festival. How rich an offering, from your point of view, did Hot Docs this year offer?
I'm always in this weird position of, you know, it's a day before the festival starts and I've probably seen about 20% of what's on offer. And that has been overwhelming. There's hundreds of shorts and features. They're just massive concentration of factual entertainment, I think is how they put it. It's pretty great. This year's been particularly ambitious. They're screening a 7.5-hour ESPN documentary about O.J. Simpson, not just the trial, but the meaning of O.J. in a post-racial world, or at least that's how he presented himself in the late 60s when he was coming up. It's a comprehensive deep dive into the history of race relations in Los Angeles, as well as the Simpson murders. That alone, I mean, that took a day to watch, but it was great. And they're programming it on the first Saturday at 12:30 in the afternoon for a straight run for people. So those poor people are not going to come outside until 9:30 or 10 o'clock at night after all the intermissions and into a brave new world. There are experimental projects in the Night Vision series. There's Doc X, which is all about pushing the boundaries of documentary and changing the idea of what a film could be about reality. They're actually screening a movie called Operation Avalanche from a Toronto filmmaker named Matt Johnson that is not a documentary. It's a sort of a conspiracy thriller comedy set in 1969 about CIA agents who try to fake the moon landing. But because Johnson shot it in real locations, or at least some scenes were filmed in real locations without any sense that it was a film shoot, he pretended to interview people. And he, I guess he did interview people, but he's incorporated that material into his film with some digital tweaking to take out present day imagery. And now it's a movie. So technically, kind of a documentary.
Well, there's a flavor then of some of the huge variety, I suppose, that, you know, constitutes documentary filmmaking today. Let's go into the first standout that you've chosen for us. What's caught your eye to start us off with?
Well, actually, this is a good example of the elasticity of documentary form. It's called Aim for the Roses. It's a film by a director named John Bolton, and it is a concept movie about a concept album about a daredevil who in 1976 decided, a man named Ken Carter, Canadian stunt driver, decided he was going to jump the St. Lawrence River from the Ontario side to the, I think, New York State side. And he was going to do it with a 1,400-foot ramp that he was building on the Ontario side, and there was no real landing site on the other side. He just wanted to jump the river. And so his theory was that he would land this rocket-powered Lincoln Continental in a rose bed. So hence the title, Aim for the Roses. It took 4 years to pull the stunt off, and it didn't really go as anyone had expected. And then in 2008, a Vancouver musician and composer named Mark Haney decided he was going to make an album about it called Aim for the Roses. Figured he'd be in production for a week and have something, and it took him 3 years. And so Bolton's film is about both the push to make the record and Carter's attempts to do the stunts, and it's also a long-form music video that reenacts a number of the numbers from the album. I thought it was delightful. It's insane, but it's about insanity. It's about being so obsessed with something that is a practical impossibility that you lose sight and end up sort of doing it.
Well, let's hear a clip of that basically insane premise and the other insane premise that came after it.
The thing about Aim for the Roses is it strikes the perfect balance between utterly amazing and completely ridiculous.
Chevrolet's worth over 50 grand. That was Aim for the Roses, which was being featured at this year's Hot Docs Festival, which is what this edition of the Monocle Arts Review today is devoting the entire show to. Now, I'm joined by Norm Wilner, who has been casting his eye across the huge range of documentaries being shown here at Hot Docs this year, North America's largest documentary festival. Where are we going next, Norm?
Well, alphabetically, the second film I would pick is Camera Person, which is this remarkable memoir from a woman named Kirsten Johnson, who has worked as a cinematographer and assistant camera on a number of documentaries over the last decade and a half, including Citizen Four and The Invisible War for Kirby Dick. She shot some of Fahrenheit 9/11 for Michael Moore. And she has assembled the footage that she shot, but not footage that was used in those films, into this really fascinating sort of elliptical memoir of where she was when she was working, not just physically in space, but where she was in her life, how she has sort of processed the work of being a documentarian with the obvious neglect that that forces on one's personal life. I mean, while she was in Serbia documenting stories of women who'd been held in rape camps during the Serbo-Croatian War, she is missing out on her kids getting older, and she's missing out on her mother's deterioration from Alzheimer's. So you cut together, as you watch it, you sort of form that story in your head. The narrative shapes itself while you're there, because she offers almost no identification. She just tells you where this next piece of footage is from. And then you get to place it into time and space and figure out what was going on with her. And there's a really fascinating narrative structure to that that sort of puts you in her head behind the lens of this camera recording these incredible real moments. There's a moment where Edward Snowden buries a USB drive in cement in the foundation of a building somewhere in an undisclosed location. And I have no idea what's on that drive. And I suspect neither does she. But you're sitting there wondering what you're seeing and how and where. And then you're smacked back into her life somewhere else in home footage that she's shot. It's absolutely fascinating. It's another experiment with what simple juxtaposition can do.
We'll talk a bit more about the playing and the melding of narrative structures in your final film you're going to talk to us about. But let's hear a clip of Camera Person.
My theory is that Americans exist to the degree that they're being filmed or believe themselves to be filmed. Yeah, so this is the natural condition.
You see how Americanized I am now. Careful. She sees everything around me, she's totally blind. That's the image of the philosopher who falls in the well, you see?
Yes.
While looking at the star.
That was Camera Person there, the second choice of my guest here today on this special edition of the Monocle Arts Review, devoted to the Hot Docs Documentary Film Festival here in Toronto. Norm Wilner is still with me. Norm, your final selection for us is rather a departure from the other two you've chosen so far.
Yeah, I would say. It's My Scientology Movie, which is a film made by Louis Theroux, who is a BBC presenter, and his remarkably focused crew about the, well, a year ago there was a film released called Going Clear, Scientology and the Prison of Belief, and it was made by Alex Gibney based on a book that was very exhaustively researched and very scrupulously fact-checked because Scientology is notoriously litigious, and Gibney and the author that he was working with, Lawrence Wright, wanted to be absolutely sure that everything they showed you in the film and everything that Wright wrote in his book was unassailable, was factually accurate, could be proven, so that the book or the film couldn't be derailed by the legal proceedings that would inevitably be raised against it. Theroux's film goes at it from a completely different direction in that he becomes a target of the Scientology intimidation machine simply by saying he wants to make a movie about Scientology and by reenacting certain things which are all on the public record, Scientology videos and stories about David Miscavige, this mysterious person who is currently running the organization who took over the church after L. Ron Hubbard died. He says, oh, I'm going to cast an actor to play Miscavige and I'm going to cast someone to play Tom Cruise. And that brings Scientology down on him like a hammer because, of course, he's doing it in Los Angeles, which is where Scientology is based. And so all he does is film what happens. And it's remarkable. People show up with cameras and people tell him he's on private roads that are public roads and that he has to leave. He becomes enmeshed in the Scientology paranoia machine, which is designed to dissuade and intimidate and make people just decide that they'd be better off doing anything else than covering Scientology or examining them. And the film is amazing. It's hysterically funny because Theroux has the timing of a comedian and simply lets these moments play in their full absurdity. But it's also really fascinating to watch an ordinary person, even if he is a BBC journalist with considerable resources, he is still just a guy who's trying to make a movie on a very small scale. And to watch Scientology try to smack him down like you'd go after a moth with a thesaurus is absolutely riveting. And it still manages to be funny because somehow it's the complete opposite to Going Clear, which was a very dry and horrific recounting of what goes on. Here, the absurdity becomes a comic engine that just keeps pushing the movie forward. I mean, I saw it alone, but I'd love to see it with an audience and see how it plays.
Let's hear a clip of that.
It's closed.
We don't want to create any issue for
and
you.
And I don't want him filming me, so tell him to stop.
Well, you're filming us.
Tell him to
stop. What, you tell him to stop?
Tell him to stop.
You tell him to stop and I'll tell him to stop. How about that?
Stop.
Tell him to stop.
Louis, you need to leave.
Catherine, we don't need to leave.
Yes, you do.
Catherine, we
you're
don't.
You're trespassing.
We're not,
well, you're
Catherine.
Not trespassing now. You can stay here all night.
Thank you. Catherine, what are you angry about? You know, we... My deep desire is actually to speak to someone from the
right.
Sea Org.
Oh,
so,
right.
So you're actually
right. Oh,
you're actually
Louis.
Doing
oh,
me a quite
yeah.
a big favor
you're
by
like,
being
oh,
here.
Oh, yeah, you're so honest. Is oh, yeah.
That was My Scientology Movie by the BBC presenter Louis Theroux. Do you think this film broadly does more for Louis Theroux's persona as a, you know, someone who'll go into these rather bizarre situations and just get himself into all these scrapes? That is the allure he's created for himself for the past couple of years. Or does this reveal actually something new about Scientology? I feel as though as a subject area, it's hugely explored in an endless kind of, you know, fascination, understandably, to documentary filmmakers, novelists, other, you know, fiction filmmakers too. Does this bring anything new to our understanding of that, or is it more a little bit more similar to sort of watching a car that's crashed, you know, on the other side of the highway?
It's interesting. I think what this film does that Going Clear didn't do is make people understand. Certainly it lets the audience understand what the experience of harassment is like and what the experience of being a former Scientology member is like. One of the remarkable things that Theroux does is lift an idea from Joshua Oppenheimer's The Act of Killing and have Marty Rathbun, who used to be the Scientology enforcer for Miscavige, who was also an interview subject in Going Clear, they bring Rathbun in to consult on these reenactments that Theroux is shooting, and he's in the room with them while they're reenacting moments of alleged violence and moments of alleged intimidation by Miscavige against his people. And the fact that I'm saying alleged now is because I'm sure that I'm going to get an angry letter at some point if I don't. So the intimidation works is my point. But what we watch is Rathbun. We get to watch him sort of re-experience the trauma which manifests itself as PTSD. And it is absolutely incredible because that's something new. That's something you didn't see in Going Clear. That's something that you need to see in a film because a book simply can't convey it to you. You need to see his face and you need to watch his body language change and to see him and Theroux almost come to blows, the intensity of these memories that are flooding back to him that are to Rathbun, that's incredible. And again, that was something revolutionary about The Act of Killing that Oppenheimer figured out, which was to get the perpetrators of a genocide to reenact their crimes and realize that they're, as the line came up in The Big Short, they're not confessing, they're boasting. Here, it's very much a type of confession from Rathbun. It's not pleasant or proud. It's really uncomfortable. And that is what being in a cult will do to a human being. And that's something that I don't think we've seen in the discussion of Scientology to date. Anyway, and I'm really glad that it's out there.
We're glad that that's out there and all of the other countless films that have been at Hot Docs here in Toronto this year. Norm Wilner, thank you very much for joining us on this special edition of the Monocle Arts Review. You've been listening to a special edition of the Monocle Arts Review with me, Tomos Lewis, here at Monocle's Bureau in Toronto. My producer was Holly Fisher, and the researcher was Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Don't forget to tune in to tonight's episode of The Cinema Show with Ben Rylan. That starts at 20:00 hours, London time. The Monocle Arts Review will be back at the same time on Monday to talk London art shows with the art newspaper's Jane Morris. But for the time being, and from me, Tomos Lewis, here at Monocle's Bureau in Toronto, thanks very much for listening.